the third round of Bilaam trying to curse the Jewish people, the pasuk says Bilaam saw it was good in God's eyes to bless Israel, so he did not go as every other time toward divination, but he set his face toward the wilderness. Bilaam raised his eyes and saw Israel dwelling according to its tribes, and the Spirit of God was upon him. He declaimed his parable and said, the words of Bilaam summoned Beor, the words of the man with the open eye, the words of the one who hears the sayings of God, who sees the visage of Shakai, while fallen and with uncovered eyes. How goodly are your tents, O Yaakov, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, your dwelling places, O Israel, Mishkanosecha Yisrael, stretching out like brooks, like gardens by a river, like aloes planted by Hashem, like cedars by water. And the bracha goes on. Before we even focus on the one nekuda we're going to speak about Mirtz Hashem today, it's important to make a note that if you take a look at the psukim that we just mentioned in Perakuf Dalet, the beginning of Perakuf Dalet, chapter 24, the concept of eyes repeats itself over and over again. That he was raised his eyes, an open eye, an uncovered eye. And Chazal tell us, and this is in source number 4, anyone who has the following three things are the students of Avram Avinu, and the counter are the students of Bilaam HaRasha. And one of those three things is an ayin ra versus an ayin tova, a good eye versus a bad eye. And Rav Chaim V'Volozhin points out an ayin tova he keneged machshava. The ayin tova in source 4 is really a reflection of what's going on in the heart, in the mind. Ki, because when a person has a good eye, koach halev talui bavanat halev, a good heart is about a good understanding, which then will be manifested in a good eye. When you see everything in a positive way, you're able to exude positivity. Bilaam was the exact opposite. In fact, as the Maharal points out, an ayin ra'a, ki ayin ra'an 5a, yesh li drachek mimenu biyoter, stay away from a person with an evil eye. Why? Ki beherif ayin po'ela ayin pulato, literally in a blink of an eye. An evil eye can have its negative effects. When a person looks at somebody in a jealous way, when a person looks at somebody in an evil type of way, it can raise a kitruk, an accusation, and shemayim and lo aleinu create negative effects on this person. Why does the person deserve this shidduch? Why do they deserve this wealth? Whatever it is. And it's very dangerous. Obviously, it's dangerous to the person themselves, and has a boomerang effect, but it's dangerous on the people one looks at as well. So we see one of the things about Bilaam is that his whole raison d'etre in life was an ayin ra, where he would look at everything from a negative point of view, which is really a reflection of what was going on inside of him. All his negative character traits, the ruach gvoha, the high spirit, and this then led to the evil consequences. We need to speak about, when we're throughout our discussion today, what changed here? What was it that this person, whose whole being was a negative eye, and prided himself on this, suddenly had Vatia Lavruach Elokim, suddenly had the Spirit of God on him, and he saw everything in a positive eye, and instead of being able to curse the Jews from his own initiative, he is, right, he doesn't go kipam bapam like he usually goes to bless the people. What changed over here? That's the backdrop, that's the question we have to ask. What was it that Bilaam saw? So we see from the psukim that there were two things. One was, they were shochem l'shvatav, as source number 2 points out. He saw the exemplary order of the Israelite camp, that the tribes maintained their separate identity, where every tribe was located in their own place in a very precise type of order. And what else did he see? He saw something unique about their tents. And what I'd like to Mirtz Hashem do today is to learn this Rashi that we all know. This Rashi is that we grew up with as children, and to try to be able to understand this Rashi from a deeper perspective, right? We know that whatever we've learned as kids, there's a lot more that meets the eye, and we need to uncover it. We need to enter into this tent, so to speak, and be able to unravel what's really deeper behind it. What's this famous Rashi, source number 3, Matovu Alecha Yaakov? Al shira'ah shepisrehem. He saw this, he said this, how goodly are your tents, because he saw their entrances, their pisrehem, their entrances, i.e. the entrances of their tent. She'enam mechuvanim zem ul zem. They were not aligned, the one opposite the other. That the architectural alignment of the tent, that could have been another alliteration, architectural alignment, okay, for another time, was that one entrance did not face the other entrance, so that one person, when they walked out of their tent in the morning, didn't immediately look into the tent of somebody else, they looked into open air, and it was a staggering effect that had such an effect on Bilam. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, what was so amazing about this? What do we learn about this? What message for our own lives? Let's take a look at it on two levels. Level number one will have three parts, and that's looking at really the pshat of this Rashi. Level number two is going to look at it on more of a metaphysical level, and we'll have two parts, and we'll see that 1C and 2A are really very much connected, and one will segue into the other. So let's begin. Shari Aram, source number 6, let's begin. He says, "Ubatama dover, shalab libo ruach acharet." What happened to him that he decided to have a different spirit in him? Dehainu shalo lekalalam, not to curse them, but rather to bless them, as he saw that their entrances were not aligned with each other. Shalo yatzis letoch ol shachaveiro, that one wasn't going to peer into the tent of his other. Nimsa, he saw this aspect of modesty. And when there's modesty, there's Hashras Hashrina. There's the divine presence. As the Pasuk says in Dvarim Kaf Gimel, Ki Hashem Elokech Mitalech Bekerv Machanecha, Hashem is walking among you. V'lo yireh b'char v'atavar. He shouldn't see anything that's inappropriate, something that's not seen. V'shav macharecha. Because if Hashem sees these things, he's going to return and take away his presence. And this is the idea, Isha v'Isha Zochu Shechina b'neihem. A husband and wife who merit will have the divine presence among them. What he saw here was the modesty, really, of the intimacy between husband and wife, that no man looked at another person's wife, that everyone was focused inside their own place. And he quotes here at the end, the asterisk, circle the katav et sefer ber hasada. The reason for this, the haynu mekevan shira Hashem pitchei mechuvanim, harei shema mina Hashem inam rotzim lizon enayim mina erva. Clearly, they're not trying to get pleasure from something that's not permitted to them. And therefore, he wasn't able to put an ayin hara. We know that Joseph at Tzadik, the Gemara tells us, was above the ayin hara, because he shelo ratza lizon enayim mina erva. Because we know, Rashi tells us on Alei Shur, that the women used to throw their jewelry on Yosef HaTzadik, that he should just look at them, and he refused to look at them. The individual who would not gain pleasure at looking at something that was not permitted for him, therefore one who guarded his eyes so well, he therefore is above the idea of an ayin hara. The children of Yosef, Vidhu Larov Bekerva Aret, are like the fish who are immune to the ayin hara, and therefore when we bless, when Bilam saw these individuals, he says, I can't curse them. They're immune to the ayin hara, because they are careful about the inyanim v'sneus. They are the children of Yosef HaTzadik, who are unable to be affected by the ayin hara. The question that we need to ask ourselves is, where is this idea of the propriety and intimacy hinted at within the text itself? It seems to be talking about the entrances of the tent. So I'd like to share with you two ideas on the next page. In 10a, we have Rav Rivlin and Sefer Parchios, who speaks about that the word ohel, tent, batovu ohalacha, in the Chumash, is mishamesha te'ur lemador lemakom megurim nayad. It is also it is a place where one lives, but it's also a euphemism for intimacy. Example, in Dvarim Hei Kav Zayin, after Mamad Har Sinai, after the revelation of Har Sinai, where 3 days prior the Jews were not allowed to be with their spouses, then the after the experience, it says, Shuvu lachem lo alechem, return to your tents, which Rashi interprets means go back to living as husband and wife. So you see that ohel is a reference to intimacy. Likewise, Vayishem michutz la'ohelo, and he lived outside, he stayed outside of his tent by the Mitzora, which again, Chazal learned, Mikan she'asur b'tashmi shamita, that a Mitzora, a leopard, is not allowed to be intimate. So clearly you see that the word ohel is connected with intimacy, matavu o'alecha Yaakov, how wondrous is the Jewish people that they are careful just to be with their spouse. As the Daniel echoes this in 10b, v'amru rabbeteinu in the Yalkut, b'sha'asher dula mitzrayim hayutznuim kol lecha b'toch ha'olah, when they went down to Egypt, everyone was careful about these issues. Lo Ruven hayam apib ishto shol Shimon, Ruven wouldn't look at Shimon's wife, v'lo Shimon b'ishto shol Ruven, and Shimon wouldn't look at Ruven's wife, elokol achad v'achad hayam b'toch ha'olah, everyone was in their own tent. And the Tznius is a school of the flaw, Lizchop, and Bani B'nai Torah. This idea of Tznius is a school to have children who are Yirei Shemayim, fearing God, and children who are exemplary in Torah study. Another hint at this is the Chaya Moshe, who also notes that the Chazal learned from this pasuk of Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosech Yisrael about the Koach HaTfilah, the Koach of Torah, which is indeed, this pasuk is said, as we begin our davening. So he teaches that really both parts of the pasuk connect to both of these ideas that we're mentioning, as well as to the different parts. Matovu o'alecha Yaakov is a reference to the women who have this area of tznius. We know that when the angels asked Ahura Avinu, when they came to visit, Aye Sara Ishtacha, where is Sara your wife? And he responds, Hinei ba'ohel, behold she's in the tent, Snuahi, she's modest. That ohel represents the tznius, the modesty of women. And we know in the pasuk, Somar lo beis Yaakov, v'sageli v'nei Yisrael, that Yaakov, elu anoshim, represent the women. So matovu alecha Yaakov, is how goodly are your tents, Yaakov, how wondrous are the Jewish women who have this quality of modesty. As a result of that, Mishkanosech Yisrael, that the Jewish people, the men who are davening and learning, will be able to have the Ashras Hashchina, the divine presence upon them, because of the tznius, the modesty of the women, which brings down the Shechina into the home. And we know, as the Ohel Moshe points out in source number 9, this is the only one of the brachas that's written in second person. Everything else is written, the rivers, the third person. This is right in the second person, Mishkanotecha Ohalecha, because this is something the Jews themselves worked on and really acquired for themselves. So level number 1A, what is Matovu Alecha Yaakov? It's about the idea of tznius, about the idea of modesty, it's about the idea of intimacy. This was something that overwhelmed Bilam, that he was unable to have the Ayin Hara affect them. 1B is taking off on this. The Birkas Mordechai points out that Ha'ich Palurei Narak Mizesh L'Istaklu Zelza, the wondrous thing of Bilam, and the Ishtamid Rav Druk speaks about Ma Tavu Alecha, like Ma Rabu Masecha, how wondrous it is, was not just that their tents didn't face each other. Ha'itpaluri Mikach Shedagula Kam Lekach. The wondrous thing was how careful they were with this. Shem Lo Yamdu B'Mesima Shelo Samchu L'Atzmam. They didn't trust themselves. They created gedarim. They created fences to make sure they weren't going to look at each other. Right? It wasn't enough that they relied on themselves, because human nature is hard to rely on. So therefore, Ha'itpalut, therefore the wondrous thing was that she Sheyatzru Banim Arim, the architecture here, that they had a special architecture, that they set up the tents in such a way that they weren't going to set themselves, they were setting themselves up to be successful. And that is the greatness about Am Yisrael. What's so special about this? Continuing on the next page, again, 1b, says Rav Pinkas, Davar zeh hu miyofiyam shel Yisrael. This, the idea of not looking at each other's tent, is one of the beauties of Klal Yisrael. Umiyisodoku shatam, and one of the foundations of their holiness. And we have many halachas we learn from this. The first, kipshuto snius, don't look into your friend's house. And he says, hadamu sakram betivo. Umaaleim hainayim tarot achar kol davar chadash. We like to see new things. And that's human nature. It was almost ironic, funny, everyone used it. As I'm preparing this shiur last week, my daughter is doing a last minute thing for her last day at work in kindergarten, and a friend comes over, and Hanalo's working on the computer printing something out, and her friend says, can I see what you're doing? And before Hanalo's able to answer, the friend walks around and says, well, I'm already looking. And I said, like, wow, like, you are a live example of this Rav Pinkus. Right? Don't even, maybe she was doing something private, you don't know. Give the person the space of not needing to see every single thing that they're doing. V'korer bei shovrim b'cheder matrigos v'yishnam delip tuchas. So Rav Pinkus Natzal is speaking clearly for Eretz Yisrael, that you walk into a building and sometimes people have their door open. And human nature is to look inside. You pass by somebody's house and you see their window open and the shades aren't down, the curtains are open. You look inside. No! Matovo lecha Yaakov. We have to recognize that to look at the floor, look at the ceiling, look at your phone, look at whatever it is, don't look inside this person's house. It was told to me that Rav Reisman Shlita says that the contemporary parallel to this would be in America, outside of Eretz Yisrael, would be in cars. People do private things in their cars. So this is not a time to be looking inside a person's car. I remember that when I used to live in L.A., I used to carpool with a very good friend to work. And I would be eating my oatmeal, and she would be putting on her makeup. Like, there are things that are going on in the car like going on in your house. Don't look inside a person's car. Oda lacha. Kimokin. Kishe ro'im anashim medabrim b'neim divrei merivovot zakon. Someone's getting angry. They lost it. This is not one of their best moments. Don't stare. Person pulled over by the police for whatever ticket. Don't stare. Move on. Right? When you pay attention to, when you give attention to, it compromises the person's dignity. And that is what this is all about. To be able to give a person their space. Another corollary of this is not to look, not to search after the secrets of your friends, and not to share a secret. As Rabbeinu Yonah writes, a person has to be very careful not to share a secret of another person. It has an effect that once you share a secret, it loses that potency of something that's private. Right, bracha is only found in davar hasamoy min ha'ayin. Something that's always concealed is what brings bracha down. The moment on a spiritual level you share that secret, you've lost that sacredness, and you've lost that aspect of bracha. Be very careful to be able to respect the dignity of a person, the privacy of a person. That's what this is about. Let's take this idea a little bit further on a contemporary level from the Sefer, the Making of a Mensch, Rabbi Wilter. And I'm going to say at the outset, we are not paskening halachically here. That is not our goal, rather just to raise awareness. So he speaks about, in Source 13, living a life of modesty is an important part of being a Jew. As Chazal teach us, no trait is more desirable than modesty. Modesty plays a role in all aspects of one's daily activity, including one's choice of words, dress, activities, and attitude. Modesty also plays a role in our dealings with others. For example, we may not access personal, private, and confidential matters of others without their knowledge. And again, the source of this is our pasuk. From this arrangement, the Gemara derives the principle of hezek re'iyah, damage done by viewing, and thus a prohibition against peering to private property without permission. Hezek re'iyah is prohibited because it can potentially cause financial harm to the affected property. The Ramban rules that hezek re'iyah, again, damage done by viewing, is prohibited for other reasons as well. It's a breach of modesty and engenders an ayin hara, an evil eye to the owner's property, as well as potential lashon hara. Another halachic enhancement of the right of privacy was introduced by Rabbeinu Gershom. And we know the famous ban of Rabbeinu Gershom, aside from polygamy, was against reading private correspondence without permission. This ban was instituted to forestall the violation of biblical prohibition. So why can't you read something that doesn't belong to you? Because it's offense. It's a protection against potential biblical prohibitions. Well, what could the potential biblical prohibitions be? Well, here are a number in 14. It's included in the more general prohibition against using the property of others without their permission. Shoel shalom edas. Accessing private information can cause harm. Grama benazikin usur. Seeking and revealing private information is comparable to tale-bearing. It's included in the more general prohibition of don't do unto others what you won't want to do unto yourself. And it's a form of deception. It's gnevas das. So one has to be careful not to look at things, not to look at correspondence or something that's not meant for you. If it's not meant for you, be careful, because you're treading on potentially many isure daraisa. Now, let's take a look at some contemporary manifestations of this. 50, a discarded letter. So the Maharav in Rutenberg, the earliest authority to quote the Banner of Rabbeinu Gershon, comments, if the letter has been discarded, it's permitted. Now, as such, the permissibility of reading discarded letter may depend upon the reasons enumerated above. For example, if the underlying reason for the ban is a more general prohibition against using the property of others without their permission, well, once the owner of the letter has discarded it, then you would be allowed to read it. If, however, the underlying reason for the ban in the asterisk of 15 is a prohibition against tale-bearing or doing to others what's hateful to you, a third party would be required to receive permission of the sender before reading it. And the halachos ketanos, he responded, even though a recipient has discarded the letter, a third party would be prohibited from reading it because the sender has not given his permission. Where is this affecting us, my friends, aside from going through people's garbages? And that is in a BCC. So we're all familiar with this, just to make sure we're all on the same page. If I send somebody an email, they're clearly the recipient, I'm the sender, I know they're reading it. If I do CC, carbon copy, and I send it to somebody else. So clearly, the recipient knows that Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda also saw this letter. Great. What happens if I do BCC? BCC, blind carbon copy, is the recipient reads this letter, but doesn't know that I sent it to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, etc. They think that this is a private correspondence. So here, the recipient isn't aware that other people are reading it, therefore hasn't given explicit permission for other people to read it. Would it be permissible for Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda to read this letter because the recipient hasn't given explicit permission? Now, obviously, my friends, when we're talking about a surprise party, or we're talking about, you know, massive email that, you know, come to the book fair at, and you BCC 100 people, that is not what we're talking about reading it. That is no private information. What we're talking clearly about is a BCC when there is a private correspondence that somebody does not know that other people's eyes are reading it. You receive this BCC. Are you allowed to read it? It would be considered like a discarded letter. According to the Halachos Ketanos in 16, until both the sender and recipient give permission to a third party to read the correspondence, this would be prohibited. And it's a fascinating question of being able of sending a BCC, knowing that this person, why am I sending BCC? Because I don't want this person to know I've sent it to somebody else. So if I know they wouldn't mind, I just do a carbon copy. Obviously, there's a reason why there's a BCC. Again, right, using your head in what type of scenario that we're talking about here, and then it has to be evaluated. Okay, here's another corollary to this, 17. The Aruch HaShulchan is uncertain if the Ban of Rabbeinu Gershon replies to postcards. Seemingly, his uncertainty, remember the postcards? You had pictures, you went somewhere, you sent a postcard, right? Seemingly, his uncertainty stems from the fact that the ban was instituted to protect the third party from reading private correspondence. A letter is intentionally sent unsealed, such as postcard, may not be subject to the ban. Yet the ban may have been instituted across the board, whether the letter was sealed or not, to prevent others from reading it. and the Aruch HaShulchan does not resolve this question. And again, the permissibility of reading a postcard addressed to someone else may depend on the reason for the ban of Rabbeinu Gershon. If the ban was made due to the prohibition against using another's property without express permission, it would be prohibited for a third party to read the postcard. If the ban was instituted because of any other reasons enumerated, it would be permitted. The same logic would seem to apply to a fax or any mode of communication that is open. Would you be able to read a fax? So, it's interesting. You'd say, well, it's open, everyone can read it. That may be true, but it may not be with the permission of that person. And again, it's Sarachion, you have to ask questions. I'm just raising this. Now, in a situation where clearly emails and texting and things like that are more private, and it's not so simple that you could just pick up somebody's phone and start just scrolling through their correspondences. 18. However, in a situation where the only way to access information about inappropriate behavior for the purpose of stopping it is by reading private email, it would be permitted according to all the reasons for the institution of the ban. For example, if a letter contains information about an illegal, dangerous relationship between the sender and recipient, be permitted to read such a letter. Such information may be important for teachers, parents, and rabbis when dealing with suspicious behavior of their students, children, etc. Rabbeinu Gershon's ban was established to stave off of Torah prohibitions, but if reading private mail could put an end to violations of Torah prohibitions or save someone from a dangerous situation, it would be permitted. So a parent who said, well, I think my kid is in a relationship that's not so healthy, and I really, you know, need to get involved here, but I'm not allowed to read their email. Wrong. Read their email, right? And there's no problem reading their email, again, if you suspect. If you're just a nosy parent or a helicopter parent who wants to know every single thing going about your child, that is not permitted. You have to give your child that space like any other person. It's only in a situation where you're saving them for potential danger. To summarize, in today's global village, maintaining one's privacy has become especially difficult and challenging. Accessing confidential and proprietary information has become easier. And it's also par for the course in a variety of venues. The age-old sense of bashfulness is eroding. And what was always considered private is now commonly made public. As Torah Jews are mandated to remain steadfast to our sacred traditions of modesty, unobtrusiveness, and walking humbly with God. Somebody just told me this week that there is this, I don't even know what to call it, there's something online, this virtual show where 15 people who are strangers are put into one house. And there are cameras in every room except the bathroom. And at any time, day and night, you can look in to see what's going on in this house and what they are doing. Right? This is the end, and very popular, yeah? This is the antithesis of Matavu Alech Yaakov. And this is something that we should walk around with pride. We have a sense of bashfulness. We have a sense of privacy. And that is something we can never lose because, again, that is what struck Bilam as, wow, there is something special about privacy which is not found among the Goyim, and he was overcome. But Tiyalav Ruach Elokim, he had a godly spirit on him. Wow, privacy, this is a new concept. I've never met this before. 1A, intimacy. 1B, privacy. Both levels, an union of modesty. 1C. Rav Rivlin talks about that what struck Bilam was not only how the tribes were aligned, each one in their own place, but everyone having their own entrances means everyone knew their own place in life. And this is the way Rav Chefetz in 21, quoting the Sabo Slobodka, speaks about in the Kapitel Kuf Lamed Vav of the Kilolom Chasto. We say, La'osa Orim Gedol in Kilolom Chasto, the one who made great luminaries, that Hashem's kindness is forever. And then we specify the sun who rules in the day, Kilulam Chasto, and the moon that rules at night. Well, is this not included in the luminaries? And the answer is, Shapasuk Ba Ladgish, the asterisk in 22, Shekolachat Tzarich Lakir Mekomo. Everyone needs to know their place. The sun needs to know their place is the day. The moon at night to teach us. Lulamed et Kol Echad Mitanu, to teach each and every one of us. That each one of us has our place, kol acham b'tafkid shu'ad lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the place that Hashem has given him, Ki acheret zeh korban ha'olam. Otherwise, it's going to be a destruction of the world. Let's try to understand this a little bit deeper, my friend. 23 Chochmah HaMatzmon, where he says the following. Rasha zu, and the double squiggly, eino ra'ah b'shel acherim. That he couldn't see anything positive in anything he looked. Kinei batzlachat zulato. He was always jealous of other people. V'chaman maman lolo. And he desired money that didn't belong to him. That was his downfall. Indeed, Rashi teaches Ayin Tova on the asterisk as somebody who doesn't have jealousy on their friend. And Ayin Tova, according to the Rambam and the Bartanura, is the Inyan al Inyan Istapkus, being satisfied with what you have. Bilam was the opposite. He was always jealous and he was never satisfied. Bilam he couldn't bear to see the success of the Jews and wanted to give them an Ayin Hara. What happened? Listen closely, 24:8 Gevaldik. Vihine, behold. Kasher hitzitz al machane Yisrael. He's looking down at the Jewish people from the top of this mountain with the intention of cursing them. Nitkal eino b'davar shaya etzlo muzar l'chalutim. He encountered something that was so strange to him. Rasha zesh nitzav ba'al korcho v'shelo b'tovato acharei merot einav lul shum shlita l'atzmo. He was drawn to something that he couldn't even control. Ra'al l'rishona b'chayav, he saw for the first time in his life Am Shalem, an entire nation, hamitrachakim b'tachlit harichut mikol ma sheshayach l'chavareyam, an entire nation that are staying far away from something that doesn't belong to them. Ad kidei asiyaz geder, to the point where they make a fence, they ensure that they don't look into what's going on into their other person's tent. Hamachazeh hazeh z'azah uta oto ad omek hanefesh. This shocked him to the core of his being. Beregazeh, the asterisk in 24a, nechsaf le'enei sichlo otzim shiflut nafsho. And he suddenly saw how base he was, how disgusting he was. V'ergisha kam am Yisrael lima lav ha'idein ha'gazu levad. And just this, how much greater, how much more refined was the Jewish people. V'acharei she'ergish b'chulsato v'chadra libo ha'karash b'shum ofen lo yatzlich l'kalalam alal da'ato sh'vavadai ro'uy am kazel l'bracha agodel tzilut nafsham. At that moment, he said, there is something so exalted about this people, I am forced but to just recognize this and to bless them. And we know that that which one sees, one desires, and that which one desires, one takes. And then you're spending your whole life just chasing after what belongs to others. And you live a very sad life. That's the life of Bilam. That's the life of so many people around. But the greatness of the Jewish people is knowing their place. La'osa orim gedolim kulum chastam. Et Hashem l'shmishelot b'yom, et ha'ireach l'mishelot b'alaylo. 25, Tiva Torah, Rav Gamliel. V'zu gam ha'siba, shasu shelo yipitchei mechuvanim zeh k'neged zeh, in the bracket, shelo yita b'glal ayin hara, el shelo ratzu l'ro ma nasa itzel sheni. They were being careful not to be nosy buddies, to see what's going on yentas in the other person's house. Why was this? Not just not to be, you know, intrusive into other people's privacy. That's 1B. 1C, not to come into jealousy. Because what happens is, we know this, that when you see this person has, and this person's life is like, you become jealous. And when you become jealous, it leads to all these terrible mitos. So it's not just the protection of privacy, it's a protection of mitos, that they wanted to make sure that they wouldn't enter into the realm of jealousy, because kinna taivan kava motzimatata min olam. Vazber nosaf of shar levayer ba'omekanyan, even deeper. There are people that compare their whole lives to other people. Why does this one have more than I do? Why are their kids more successful than I? How did they get this type of shidduch? You're just leading yourself down into a path of self-destruction.
Everybody
It's none of our concern of what's going on in somebody else's house. Because, here's the key, Ki yodea shema shashem yitbarach natan lo zehatov biyoter avuro. Because we recognize in the depth of our being that whatever this person has is best for them. And even if this person has the house full of all this goodness, I'm not mekana. Elaboteach, I'm not jealous. Becholi bo, Shakarish Baruch Hu manik l'chol achad et hatov biyoter avuro. That Hashem gives every person what is best for them. The example which I've given before is that when I used to go flying when many years ago when the kids were little, and we would be waiting for the suitcases to come down. Oh, those terrible moments of waiting to seeing black in front of you, most literally, black, right? And so I would carry my kids, and I would see a purple suitcase, and I love the color purple, and I'd say, let's take this suitcase. It's purple. It's beautiful. Right? Emo loves purple. So they would look at me horrified, thank God. And they said, Emo doesn't belong to us. It's stealing. And I would say to them, not only is it stealing, but the suitcase wouldn't even be good for me. Because nothing in this suitcase would fit me. It's not meant for me. And we all have our suitcases in life. Right? So to be caught up in the outer trappings, the purple suitcase, when what's inside that type of life is not what is engineered for me in my Avodas Hashem, it's going to be very limited. It's going to be a waste of my life. So this is Matovu Alecha Yaakov, that every person knows that my tent doesn't look into your tent because I have exclusivity on my tent. I have exclusivity on my suitcase. And as beautiful as your suitcase may look, purple with all the glitter, it's not meant for me. And I'm able to focus in on what's on mine and not on yours. And that is why Bilam was unable to give them an Ayin Hara. The Mishkat Shemen, Rav Kaufman, brings down thou. The Rashi teaches Vatia Lav Ruach Elokim, and Bilam was the Spirit of God. The Zohar Kadosh says differently. That Vatia Lav Ruach Elokim, that wherever Bilam looked, was, you know, people would just throw a blanket over their kid's head. He just had an Ayin Hara. What is Vatia Lav Ruach Elokim? The Rechaim HaKadosh says, likewise, it was on the Jews, not on Bilam. Hashem put on the Jews a spirit of God as a spirit of protection that Bilam was not able to give them an Ayin Hara. And the Siddur HaGra brings, based on this, Zohar HaKadosh, the pasuk that we say, in Uval Tzion, Yishayah Nuntek Kavala, Vani Zo Briti Otav Amar Hashem, Ruchi Asher Alecha Lo Yamush Mipicha. This is the covenant. The spirit that was on you will never leave you. Says the Gra, Shekavana L'ruach Zeh Sheparasa Kodesh Baruch Yisrael. This is a reference to the spirit that Hashem covered the Jewish people, B'Sha'a Sheretzah Bilam L'Kal Kalam, at the time that Bilam wanted to curse them. Umaftiach Hashem Yitbarach Shezeh HaRuach HaNatun Alecha Yisrael Lo Yamush Ma'alecha Ma'al Zaracha V'Zera Zaracha Me'atav Ad Olam. Hashem promises that this spirit will be on us for all times. And it's really, says the Chernobyl Rebbe in Ma'or V'Shemesh, Amida K'negen Mida. They kept themselves from looking at that which did not belong to them in order to not put an Ayin Hara on other people's property, the Hezek Re'iyah. Mida keneged mida, Hashem is putting on a protection from Ayin Hara. Rav Be'er in Masei Rokeim in 28 adds a little bit differently that what was the greatness of Yosef HaTzadik that he was above the Ayin Hara is that he was able to acknowledge that everything that he had came from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? Biladai Elokim Yanech Lo Paro. It wasn't about him. He gave everything over to Hashem. He didn't take any of the credit for himself. So Shekenk Asher Adam Mevi Shekol Atov Matnat Shemaimi. When a person realizes that all the good comes from Hashem, V'no Adlu Melechet Shemaim, and is meant to serve Hashem, V'umechaber Kol Devar L'Mekoro, and brings everything back to its stores, so then you're not going to want to, you know, take something that doesn't belong to you, because you understand that we all get B'tai Kanur with exactness at Tei Kelav L'Melechet Shemaim, what we need to serve Hashem. And therefore, it's not, there's no point in looking at the entrance of your friend's tent. So when we understand this idea of I'm focusing on my life, and I recognize that whatever I have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when I'm able to bring everything back to its source and live that way, so I'm living a life above the Ayin Hara. So my friends, on source number one, three ways of understanding Rashi. It's a reference to the intimacy, to the modesty, to the privacy, and it's a reference to warding off jealousy. That's Matovo Alecha Yaakov, Mishkanosecha Yisrael. Now let's move to more of the philosophical, metaphysical way of looking at this Rashi. Let's take a look at two ideas. Idea number one. Chaim Moshe, source number 29, brings the Arizal that says that there are in heaven 12 windows paralleling the 12 tribes, and every tribe has their own shar, has their own entrance to get up to their tefillos, to get up to Shemayim, and it's important that every tribe knows their place. And indeed, we know, it's brought down in the Halachas Farim, that there should be 12 windows in shul to parallel this idea that everyone has, every tribe has their path in the service of Hashem. If that's true of every tribe, it's also true of every individual. The Avnei Afod, or Friedman, brings down the Or Yesharim that speaks about the following. L'chora ma'u ha'ishaychut pitzcheim lebracha. One of the kitrugim, one of the accusations of Bilam was, the Jews are only going through the motions, right? Of they're copycatting, they're avodas Hashem. It's not coming from themselves. Everyone does what their friend does. However, when they saw Shein Pitchei Mechuvanim, Hainu Ptichat Halev Lavodat Hashem Yisbarach Einam Mechuvanim Etzlam, when they saw that he saw the entrances, what entrances are we talking about? The entrances of their heart. When he saw that every Jew has their own entrance, one Jew isn't mirroring the Avoda, the service of another Jew, he says, wow, this is deserving of bracha. And indeed, we know that Rav Dessler brings down, verse 34, on the idea of that Yitzchak Avinu davel nochach ishto across from his wife, and Hashem vayater lo, Hashem answered Yitzchak, einu dom et tzadik ben tefilo et tzadik ben tzadik, to tefilo et tzadik ben rasha. What is the greatness of a tefilo et tzadik ben tzadik? So Rav Dessler explains that the greatness of Yitzchak Avinu was he didn't follow in the ways of Avraham Avinu, exactly copying Avraham Avinu's koach, his attribute was chesed, and Yitzchak Avinu's attribute was gvura, was more justice. So this is the greatness of a tzaddik ben tzaddik, that you have to find your own path in life. And we know this, that the Ben Melech speaks about the greatness of Klal Yisrael, Tomar Sheet Zayin Kol Sheva Betunam Yuchedet L'Shvach, that every tribe has its own quality, U'Bekach Nasu Am Yisrael Kahal Goyim. The greatness of Klal Yisrael is our multiplicity, is that each person has their own way to serve Hashem. 33, again, Chochman Matzpun brings down, Hasaba Haya Omer, Shaikara Rishon Hi, Lo Lechakot Masim Shalchirim. Rule number one is, don't imitate others. Afilu b'mashin ogeya l'ruchnias, even when it comes to spirituality. A person has to find what is their responsibility to be able to serve Hashem. This idea of our uniqueness, our specialness, is an idea we've spoken about many times. We'll remind ourselves. Time of Tammuz is Mani Tshuva Meshamshim Ubayim. Tammuz is already getting us into Rosh Hashanah. This is a piece from Rav Wolbe on Yemei Arachamim in 35. Where we know that in Rosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'ei Ha'olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maro, that we all appear in front of Hashem like Kivnei Maro. Whatever Kivnei Maro means, the upshot of the Gemara is as an individual. Whether it's the sheep, whether it's the steep pathway, whether it's the individuals in the army, it means we come as an individual. And the way Rav Wolbe describes it is, he says, you can imagine the neshama coming in front of Hashem and take any mitzvah, let's say davening, and Hashem says to the neshama, i.e. you, what were you thinking about when you were davening? Well, davening is the wrong question, because there we can answer. I was thinking about my dinner tonight, my errands I had to do, whether they the dry cleaning was going to be finished today or tomorrow, so that maybe is a wrong example. Let's take another example. Scratch that example. Stucco. Person comes to your door. Well, maybe that's a bad example, too. Let's take a stucco box. Okay, I found an example. We take a quarter shekel that I put into the stucco box. Okay, before davening, I put a stucco. What were you thinking? I don't know. Well, what were you thinking about when you did the mitzvah? Whatever mitzvah it is. Saying no shako. What were you thinking about when you drank your coffee in the morning? I don't know. He says, a stam adam isn't going to stand in front of the Beis Din. Where are you? Where is your uniqueness in your avodas Hashem? Are you bringing that which makes you special into every single thing that you do into your avodas Hashem? And that's what Yiddishkeit is predicated on. It's finding yourself. It's finding your unique voice, right? Person has to say, Chayav Adam Lomar, Bishvili Nivra Olam. For me, the world is created. I'm summarizing now 37 and 38. And when you understand that no two people are alike from the beginning of time to end of time, it means that Hashem woke me up in this morning. It means that He wants something from me today that nobody else can bring in the entire world from the beginning of time to the end of time into this universe today to bring Kvod Shamayim to this world except for me. Where am I? Where am I in terms of my Avodas Hashem? Where am I in terms of my mindset, of my uniqueness? How am I taking me with all of me and bringing it and to make this world a more godly place? That's the question that we're being asked. And that's why there's an imperative to know who you are. Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. Yaakov was left alone, right, when the Malach fought with him. The idea of Levado is the idea, like Yachol Kadosh Baruch Hu, is Levado, is alone, is oneness. That's that quality we have to find. And he quotes at the end of 38, the Ramban, on the Aseret HaDibrot. How does it begin? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzeitzicha Meretz Yisrael. Individual. I am the Lord, your God. You, individually. Because I'm interested in individual relationship with you. And that, my friends, is why, moving on to 39, an indication of whether there is a place for you is when you are alone. Are you able to be by yourself? And that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that says, Haneir Balayla, one who's wandering at night, Vamahalach b'derech yichidi, is walking alone, Umefane libo levatala, and you turn your heart to nothingness. You're worthy of destroying your soul. You're looking at night. It's quiet. It's a time of favor. How can you be thinking about nothingness? It shows you that there's no, you can't be with yourself. You've lost that idea of being a full world. You know, my friends, we have this often when we enter into our cars. So it's almost like automatic pilot. We turn on our car, whether if you're a keyless car or you're like me with a key car, you turn on the ignition, you put your seatbelt on, maybe you put your seatbelt on first and then you turn on the ignition, lo mishana. You do those two things. What do you do next? So if you were to ask, right, do a survey. Not only teenagers, do a survey. What do you do next? I would believe, and I may be mistaken, but this is a gut feeling, 9 out of 10 people would, let's see if you get the right answer, turn on something to listen to. It could be in the car, it could be on their phone, it could be a sheer, I don't care. It could be music, it could be whatever. They need some noise. So you'll tell me, you know, I'm driving for an hour. It's a great time to listen to a shiur. And it is. And there's also time in the car where it's important just to have quiet. Just to be with yourself. And we find, and think about this. This is something for you to process as an individual. That we want to drown out that individual time. And we all need to have that space just to be us. Just to be able to hear our own voice. there is so much noise going on that I can't hear who I am. And Rav Ubi, you know, they tell the story about Rav Ubi's yeshiva, this is what I've heard, that he would have the boys go and take a walk before they were in morning Seder, just to spend time with themselves. And one boy refused to go. And finally, one morning, he went on the walk, and he was back before you know it. Rav Ubi said, "Did you see a scary animal?" "No, no, no, I took my walk." He said, "You did. You saw yourself. It's scary to see yourself." And this is why Rav Ubi speaks about that the Zohar Tzara Gdola Shel Bnei Yeshivos Mechanchim Shanim Rabim Rabo B'Pnimiut V'Sham Heim Nimsaim Tamim B'Toch HaRabim B'Li Rega Achad Shel B'Didut U'Bazeh Heim Alulim L'Abed L'Gamrei Et Yichudiyut Shelahem V'Lishkoach L'Gamrei Ma'Hitpatchut L'Adam Atzma'i. Where he says, when you send a child at a young age to dormitory, and they grow up their entire lives in a dormitory, they are just around people, and they become cookie cutters, and they aren't able to develop, and it's a development, that voice of their own, that sense of self. And he says how sad it is to have a group of people where everyone just talks like everyone else, and acts like everyone else, and does like everyone else, and you've lost that sense of self. And that sense of self is what's so important. And that, to a Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael, what is so beautiful about the tents are facing each other? Individuality. Where every person has their own voice, has their own color, has their own aspect that they're bringing to this world that no one else can, and that you can appreciate that, and that you can acknowledge that, and you can develop that. Our final idea for today, my friends. 41, Rav Druk. On the pasuk kol dodi dofek pitchili, Rabbi Yassa Oma, Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael, B'ni, pitchili petach achad shel tshuva kechudo shomacha. Hashem says to us, open up a little opening, like the eye of a needle. V'ani potech lechem psochim sheyu egalos v'kronot nechnasot bo. And I will open up an opening, they're different yourselves, that wagons can go through, or the opening of a big ulam, a big room. You open up a little opening, whoa, will I respond. This is why he couldn't curse them. Because they have the quality of tshuva. Therefore, he can't affect them. Even when they sin, they do tshuva. So since they're always constantly doing tshuva, how can I curse them? That they don't face each other, the entrances. Why? Ki apetach shiyisrael polschim aidei tshuva. He know kichudo shomacha, our opening, the opening of our heart to do tshuva, is a tiny little opening. They know mechuvan klal kineged a petach shakarish baruch hu poteach avaram shuv kepitcho shalulam, and it no way reflects the opening that Hashem enables us to do tshuva as large as a large room. In kach potchim ptachim elu shenam mechuvanim ze kineged zem vatim mekoach tshuva shakla Yisrael. What does it mean that the openings aren't aligned? Our opening of desire to do tshuva is nowhere near the way Hashem responds. And because Hashem just helps us with such siyata d'shmaya, with such love, with such ability to help us cross that finish line, it's not parallel, so therefore there's no hope to curse them. Because just a little movement in the right direction, boom! They're already, you know, down the road in tshuva land. As the Midrash points out in the 42, that tshuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha, do tshuva until Hashem is a witness. Don't read it as ad, but read it as aid. Do tshuva ad Hashem Elokecha until Hashem Elokecha. Your God says the Midrash in Psika, don't read it as ad until, but read it as Hashem Yitbarach aid b'davar. Different vocalizations that Hashem is a witness. Shumefarish emil shon edut. Ubeir Inyan says it's Vas Emes, Shivada Yeshihure Chuva Bachoy Israel. All of us have these moments of tshuva inside of ourselves. V'akar Hashem yisparach bochein libos v'klayos, and Hashem looks inside of us. Ve'ita ad shelo notzra machshava b'lev, Hashem yisparach makir pap. Even before we're able to acknowledge that I even had this moment of hirurei tshuva, of a thought of doing tshuva, boom, Hashem has already acknowledged it and set into motion that which will help us to be able to accomplish it and actualize it. That's the openings that are parallel. And Freifeld speaks about this. He says, you know, so many people in their life say, you know, been there, done that. How can I do tshuva? I've tried. Just doesn't work for me. So he says, when the Medrash says in 45 that the tshuva predated the creation of the world, the power of tshuva is the generative force, the creative force. It's not confined to the three-dimensional world because it actually created the world. This force exists in a fourth dimension, and any person that harnesses its power can break through all the three-dimensional limitations and become a new person. You're right. If you think that tshuva is about going through, you know, the normal process of this world, you're right. You're going to be stuck. But tshuva is a force predating the world. It's a whole different dimension. You just take a little bit of movement forward, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to respond and inspire you and give you the people and enable you to move in directions you never imagined. Let's end with a story which illustrates this. It's a recent story of a barber in Bnei Brak. Goes to work in the morning and sees his entire store was vandalized. Apparently, the equipment the barber has is very expensive, and it was in the thousands of shekels. As he's trying to process what happened, he suddenly is overtaken with an unbelievable fear. He and his friends were raising money for a particular family. They had thousands of dollars in an envelope that he kept in his one of his drawers. And he says, oh my gosh, if that money is gone, that's going to be hard to recoup. And he quickly goes to the third drawer, opens it up, breathes a sigh of relief. Somehow or other, that envelope is there. And he says, you know what? This is a kapara. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted me to go through this loss, but at least I didn't lose the money that didn't belong to me, and at least we're able to give this money to this family. Good. I mean, it wasn't so good, but part one of the story. A few months later, 8 or 9 months later, the barber's in the shul, and a fellow taps him on the shoulder, looking like an Oreo cookie, a penguin, right? Black and white, payas, beard, all 9 yards. And he says to the barber, do you remember me? And the barber looks at him and says, no, should I? He says, yeah, I'm the guy that stole from your barber shop a few months ago, and I'm here to repay you, and I want to thank you because you were the impetus for me to do tshuva. And the barber looks at him like, hello? So he says, first of all, I'm not taking your money. Make a suda sadaya that you're a Jew. It was a kapara for me. I accepted it. He says, but tell me, in what way did I encourage you to do tshuva? He says, I'll tell you. He says, a few days after the robbery, I felt a little guilty of what I did, and I went to your barber shop to see how you were doing. And what I noticed was, and it was a long line because everyone felt bad for you, so they were giving you a lot of business whether you needed a haircut or not, was that you were telling everyone, because everyone likes to hear the story from the horse's mouth, right? Everyone the same thing. And even I, when I sat in the barber's chair, you were telling me the same thing. Hashem loves me so much, and you see that there's a God in heaven, and Hashem took exactly what he needed to take from me, and this envelope, Hashem clearly blinded the robber's eye, and he didn't see this envelope, and there is an exact justice in this world, and everything is good, and every single person, and you were so excited about this, and you were so, you know, clear about the hand of God in this. He says, it was so clear to me that if this is the way you're responding, then there must be something much greater that I'm missing in my life. And I went to check it out, and I'm now a Chozer B'tshuva. And he says, I want you to know something. You were right. I went through every single drawer, taking everything I saw. I didn't see that envelope. Hashem clearly blinded me to see what I was supposed to see and didn't see what I wasn't supposed to see. And here's such a perfect example. The person felt a little bit, even robbers, a little bit of remorse, a little bit of guilt. I've taken away this person's parnassa. How are they doing? You open up a pischo, a feeling of remorse. Maybe he didn't even acknowledge that it was remorse. It may have been curiosity. Whatever it is, it's a little bit of an opening to go in and see. And Hashem enabled him to see such a picture that changed his life around 180 degrees. And my friends, for us, when we take a look at this Rashi and the lessons we learn for our lives, one, intimacy. Husband and wife, the Shechina is there. You can't have any Ayin Hara. Level number two, privacy. Rethink those BCCs. Rethink looking into people's cars. Rethink standing around and watching when someone is put on an ambulance or in any other situation that compromises their integrity. Don't look. Don't look. Be able to move on. Allow people to have privacy. Level number three is being able to recognize the individuality of every person in terms of not being jealous. Being able to recognize that everything that I have is exactly what I need, my purple suitcase. I have my eye prescription, as Rav Dessler said, and trust me, nobody else would be able to see from this prism of astigmatism. It is so carefully calculated. Every part of Hashem's world in my life is perfectly calculated. 2A, being able to have that individual voice, know my individuality, allow myself time not to turn on something in the car, once in a while, just to be, just to think and process. And in a world of so much noise, we need that. And finally, 2B, that know that the opening of tshuva, we just even have that thought, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to enable us to come to that fourth dimension, that incredible opening of closeness to Him. Matovu Alecha Yaakov, Mishkan Secha Yisrael.